This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today, our special guest is Mike Castle. Mike is Senior Commodities Economist with StoneX. We'll talk markets in just a moment. First off, Shauna Morris is Vice President of Trade Policy with the National Milk Producers Federation on Trade Resources.
The administration's new America First trade promotion program funding. This is new export promotion money that they announced that they would be making available later this year. We're expecting decisions out on who gets awarded how much across U.S. agriculture in the next few months. And that's another space where we've looked at how do we tap into those new resources from the administration in order to help drive some of these more positive views about how dairy can play a helpful role in diets and the policy elements that shape that landscape.
This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today, our guest is Mike Castle. Mike is Senior Commodities Economist with StoneX. He's in Kansas City. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
Let's look at what we're trading right now. We're now into the month of April. Have a couple of USDA reports in the tell of us, kind of pushing us. We've got a prospective plantings report, so at least we've set the marker, if you will, for moving forward. We also had a quarterly grain stocks report. And then you throw in just what we've been dealing with throughout the month of March, and that's uncertainty from geopolitical risk. How do we handle all of this going on and trying to follow the markets and where they're trying to go? Is it somewhat challenging?
Oh, yeah. I think, top advice is probably get faster at clicking refresh. Because, like you alluded to there, there is a lot going on in the market these days, both from an actual fundamental perspective with our big USDA reports yesterday, but also, like you mentioned, the geopolitical side. And I think, obviously today's price action throughout the grains and oilseeds was pretty ugly. I don't think that's necessarily a reflection entirely of fundamentals. I think it, being coinciding with the stock market kind of rebounding here on some potential headlines of maybe an earlier than expected end of this conflict in the Middle East. I think from a short-term perspective, we know that we have seen a lot of fund buying, a lot of managed money, speculative buying across the grains and oil seeds here lately. So I think today's action is probably more a reflection of money flow. That short term, what do I do with all this managed money? If I'm, a Wall Street guy, I'm not feeling good about the stock market because of geopolitics. I dump it into the commodities, right? That's kind of seen as something of a safe haven. Kind of following crude oil as well. So we saw not just crude sell off, but again, the broader commodity sector as a whole sell off here. And I really think, again, this intraday move, one day kind of ugly here, more a reflection of some of that quote-unquote scared money, for lack of a better term, going back to the stock market. Again, that's in the green here today. And there's kind of the two ways to look at it for those guys. Again, the short term is what I just kind of explained there. The longer term is that funds like to get long and stay long commodities during times of inflation. And, obviously an energy shock like this can be expected to increase inflation, not just here in the States, but elsewhere. So you would expect them to want to get long the commodities, even not looking at fundamentals sometimes if they expect inflation to be a bigger story. So it's not like it's going to scare them all away entirely today, but certainly because of these headlines, them, wanting typically to stay in the equities when they get something like this, hey, maybe we'll see peace sooner than we think. You see that money flow come back and all of a sudden things don't look as good. And at the same time, the wheat market, for example, you're seeing pretty sizable length from managed money across the board there. They're looking at pretty big carries, maybe not wanting to hold on to that. So could be some liquidation of those as well, especially with last month or yesterday being the end of a month and the end of a quarter. So today's move, I really think, is a lot more money flow driven. But there's certainly plenty to watch on the fundamental side, too.
We're talking with Mike Castle, senior commodities economist with StoneX. It's the Agribusiness Report.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Let's talk about supply chains. Each year, Cotton Incorporated's global supply chain marketing team has hundreds of meetings with brands and retailers in all corners of the globe. They're working to find innovative ways to replace synthetic fabrics with natural, sustainable cotton, to expand your customer base and drive more demand. You grow the cotton. The Cotton Research and Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
This is the Agribusiness Report. Our guest today, Mike Castle, StoneX Senior Commodities Economist. All right, we're looking at possible acreage here, and according to USDA, if we see this pop up in acreage and we don't change the supply-demand side of the equation, Mark Welch at Texas A&M says we could see $4 corn. Thoughts?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And our exports, you know, obviously record strong, but even with that, we're looking at pretty heavy stocks, right? Still a big carryout because we just produced this record crop last year, right? Over 17 billion bushels for the first time, easily all-time high yields. And I think, you know, yesterday's price action in the corn market obviously got a bearish surprise in terms of, you know, prospective plannings. The trade was looking for 94.4 million. Again, last year was the highest since the 1930s at 98.8. So 94.4 is still fairly, you know, good sized corn crop. And it came in at 95.3. So close to a million above expectations, but you didn't see corn sell off that aggressively yesterday. And I'm guessing, and I put out a piece on this on YouTube yesterday, but I'm guessing that's kind of largely a reflection of the market not expecting that to be our actual plantings number. You know, we had kind of a twofold issue with the responses. I think the response rate was something like 37%. It was the lowest in quite a while, if not ever. And at the same time, a fair amount of these responses came in before the war in Iran even kicked off. So fertilizer prices had not rallied yet. And that's kind of what I tried to highlight, was just how much nitrogen affordability has eroded here in the last month. You know, prices today look certainly a lot different than they did at the start of March, you know, when the survey went out. So that's really just reflecting farmers' intentions as of the beginning of March. And, you know, some of the responses did come in a little later. And thankfully, we did have a good fall anhydrous run. A lot of folks had their spring needs booked. But if you didn't, I do expect to lose some acres from here. This is just my own personal opinion, but I do think that 95.3 will probably be our biggest acreage print of the year. And I think that's, you know, probably a part of why corn was able to hold on to some ground yesterday. Obviously, again, kind of selling off, I really think, more outside pressure here today. And that's not to say that the fundamentals aren't heavy. They certainly are. Anything above 2 billion carryout is heavy. It's fairly ugly, right? But again, demand's quite strong. We're starting to see more policy support. If we could get to a point where we could see E15 sales year round and actually get the infrastructure to sell E15 year round, and, you know, not just in certain places, not just the Iowa leading the charge there, it would certainly be supportive of demand. And I do think, you know, there is the potential not just for losing some acres here, on the corn side of things. I think, you know, just based on how the weather has been here the last, call it, month or two, you know, yesterday's prospective plantings, all wheat acres at just under 43.8 million, extremely small, right? Way smaller than expected, by about a million. And the expectations were pretty small in general. So Southern Plains, obviously, a lot of this wheat not looking great coming into the spring. If you didn't have your, nitrogen and phosphate needs booked ahead of time or put that top dress on over the winter, if you didn't buy it and you have to go book it to do it this spring, you're really not incentivized to do so. So I think we may lose some acres there as well. Certainly a year where you could see more acres getting grazed out or switching to something like a Milo, or whatever other spring crop we need. I think people are certainly looking for alternatives with where input prices are today. And I certainly can't blame them. And the wheat side of things is where it honestly looks the worst. Just because, in 2022, when we saw this huge rally in the fertilizer market, we had these all-time high prices. We also got a massive rally in the wheat market, right? Because of how important the Black Sea region as a whole is to global wheat supply. We're not getting that this time around, right? Your prices run higher. And, obviously we have improved on grain prices a bit here, probably higher than a lot of folks would have expected coming into this spring. But they're still not good, right? There's no good way to sugarcoat that. Affordability looks ugly. So I will say, again, I think it would be heavy if we get that 95.3 planted. But I don't expect to see us stay that high. I don't think we're going to have this situation like last year where, March acreage, this report, we were basically the exact same at 95.3 last year, but we picked up another 3.5 million acres into final. And I don't think we see that happen this year, largely because of that uptick in inputs, not just on the fertilizer side, but diesel as well.
Again, our guest today is Mike Castle, Senior Commodities Economist with StoneX. This is the Agribusiness Report.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Our guest today, Mike Castle, Senior Commodities Economist with StoneX. All right, Mike, we were looking at acreage earlier. Here's one. How about canola up 15%? I know we're talking less than 3 million acres here, but canola. What can we pull from this?
Yeah, I think it's kind of exactly what I'm alluding to there. Of this, look for, okay, what is a less input intensive crop that I can grow? Canola is a prime example of that. And especially when you look in the areas like the Northern Plains where, a lot more of that stuff is grown, they're one of the more urea heavy areas in the U.S. And that's kind of the nitrogen product that's been hit the hardest. So if they didn't have their stuff booked in advance, they're going to be looking at some pretty ugly math planting wheat up there. And that's, part of why spring wheat acres are down so aggressively as well. But I think canola is a good example of an alternative. Cotton acres came in much higher than expected yesterday. I mean, obviously still fairly low at 9.6. But, I think it's probably a reflection of folks looking for alternatives because of, how expensive inputs are right now.
All right, Mike, if we want to keep up with you and StoneX, how do we do that?
Yeah, you can go to StoneX.com or follow me on Twitter, X, I should say, formerly Twitter, @Mike_Castle2. We also put a fair amount of stuff out on YouTube. I believe that handles @StoneXOfficial.
Mike Castle is Senior Commodities Economist with StoneX. I'm Tony St. James. This is the Agribusiness Report.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
Building upon USDA's Grazing Action Plan, a memorandum of understanding.
Use our pens and sign this thing right now.
Get the things done. That's right.
Put it into action.
Interior Secretary Doug Burgum and Agriculture Secretary Brooke Rollins signing the MOU at USDA headquarters this week. Secretary Rollins explains the six key actions associated with the memorandum as it pertains to livestock grazing on U.S. Forest Service and Bureau of Land Management acreage.
It cuts red tape and improves efficiency. It strengthens rancher partnerships, the ranch immersion programs for federal employees, teaching the federal employees how important our ranchers are, enhancing transparency and data access, expanding practical land management tools, and maintaining grazing capacity.
With one aspect of the plan at MOU, filling grazing allotments on public lands to build up our nation's beef herds and beef supplies. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.